welcome to episode number 2 of the program. Last week, I want to recap a little bit what we did, and then we're going to get into some new things this week. But before we go too far, we always have the administrative things we've got to take care of here in the beginning. You're watching the program. The program is a show that teaches you how to program, and our intention is to teach anybody who's never touched a computer to write a program, to learn how to write a program. And as I mentioned last week, these first 3 weeks, this being week number 2 of the 3, we're just going through some very basic concepts of how a computer works in the background, real basic concepts about conditional statements, like if something is this, then do this, and variables, and just some very basic stuff that's common across all languages. And then, not next week, but the week after, we're going to take all this and we've talked about and put it into coding examples and start teaching you Python is our first language we're going to teach. We do this in 12-week segments for each language, and as I mentioned last week, the intention here is I'm only going to do these 3 weeks in the Python, and then from there we're going to have some people that I know that know these languages even better than I do, much better than I do. I look up to them, to do this coding examples and teaching for us. So you may see me do it on languages at some point, but initially the plan is to have other people who use the languages every day inside and out, know it inside and out to do the programs. So I want to do a quick recap. Well, I still got more administrative stuff. See, that's what happens. You call this administrative stuff you got to do. We can get our show on youtube.com/techzenTV and follow us on Twitter, techzenTV. And we'd love to have you go out and subscribe to YouTube. But if you're downloading us, though, please give us a rating off of iTunes or wherever you're getting the podcast from. And I'll probably remind you again because I'll forget by the end that I did it. But yeah, definitely go out there to iTunes and give us a rating out there as well. So we are in week 2. This is our second show. And as I mentioned last week, these shows are recorded kind of in bulk, but we do a couple of them at a time. And then like I'm already working on the Python videos, which will be released and starting in 2 weeks, but I already have 2 of them ready to go and they're kind of ahead of time. So I kind of know where I'm going with the Python thing if I do that while we're in here. All right, so last week, recap, we talked about memory space, bytes, words, bits, and kind of how memory works as far as variables go as well. We talked about the different variables, characters, strings, integers, floats, booleans, and arrays. As I mentioned, there are more than that. This is just like the high level. They're all variations of those, so long int, short int, things like that. So we talked about how to assign variables, like a is equal to b or a is equal to 5. And then also if you do a equals 5, it's more of a comparison type operator versus an assignment operator. So this week we're going to talk about conditions and loops. And the very first condition, and this is probably something that everybody has probably heard of, is the if statement. And it really is as simple as if this is true, then do this. And it actually doesn't get much simpler than the conditional statement, the if conditional statement. The way it works and is the program typically goes from top to bottom. And we'll talk about functions next week, which kind of throws that out top to bottom. But it typically follows from top to bottom, and you get to a particular situation. And I'm going to use last week's A equals 5 again. And you say, basically, if A equals 5, then do this. And you can also take that one step farther and say, if A equals 5, then do this, else I want you to do this. So basically, if it's equal to 5, do this. If it's not, do this. So that's considered a conditional statement. Now, depending on the language, depends on how that looks. Some languages, as I mentioned last week, will do if, and then in brackets, you'll put the variable a equals, and it'll be a equal 5. And then you'd have a curly bracket. And then you would do whatever you want to have done would be in there, and you close the curly bracket. So basically, anything between those two curly brackets is done. Some languages would say if a equals 5, then, and you would put the stuff you want done, then you would say end if. So it really, they're doing the exact same thing. It's just the structure of the language. I mentioned semantics of the language. If you understand what a conditional statement does, then you just got to figure out how that language wants to see you structure it. And every language is a little bit different. Some of them are very similar to each other. Some of them aren't similar in at all. So it really is just learning the structure. In fact, the Python language is unusual compared to other, to most other languages, which we're still going to start learning Python. We get into the if statements. The whole concept is exactly the same. If this, then I want you to do this. But what it uses for delineation of the different sections is completely different than other languages. So we're going to teach you a language that's different starting out, which now that I think about that, maybe that shouldn't have been the best case. But Python is a very popular and a very, very powerful language. So that's why we picked Python. It's not because it was different or the same as any other language. Just want you to, you know, if you get the concepts down, you can take and apply them to any language. You can, I really believe that if you know one or two languages very well, you can pretty much learn any language in a matter of a few hours. All right, so now let's take the if statement to a little bit deeper level. So you have this if statement, you say, if A is equal to 5, I want to print this value, A is equal to 5, and then I want to add that to this. So I'll say, okay, well, if it's not equal to 5, then I want to say, print it out saying it's not equal to 5. But let's say you have another variable in there. You want to say, well, if it's equal to 5 or 6. So you could say, if A is equal to 5, then do this. Then you can do an else, and then you can do another if saying, if A is equal to 6, then do this. Else, do this. So you can basically combine multiple if statements together. Now we're going to talk about a different structure called, depending on the language, a select statement is typically what everybody, or most people call it, some people call switch, case, else, whatever, a case statement that allows you to do something very similar to this, but on a much bigger scale. In fact, it's much cleaner than doing the if else structure of things. And I don't know of a language that doesn't have it now. There were times that a lot of languages didn't do this case statement. So you had to do if else, if then else, if then else, if then else, down this conditional statement. And back in the old days, which is back in the 80s for me, you could have if then else statements strewed from pages and pages of them instead of using a case statement, which now makes things much cleaner to use. So we're going to talk about case statements as well. And I'm not going to go in and show you all this week. This is something we're going to show you when we get into the actual languages. So we're talking about the conditional statements. You know, any programming language has this conditional statement where you can say, if it's this, then do this. And then if it's not, do this. And if it's not, and then if it's this, then do this type thing. So they all have this functionality. They all structure it a little differently. Some of them are very similar. Some of them are completely different. But we want to talk about the conditional statement. So the one thing I mentioned about the case in the switch, again, it depends on the language. Most people, if you tell them it's a case statement, they understand what it means. Some of them will start out with the word switch, and some of them will start out with the state. I can't remember the different languages use. But anyways, basically what happens, you say, I want to switch based on A. So you put a switch and then A after it. And then beneath there, typically inside of brackets for most languages, you would put this word case, and you would put in the value of 5 and a colon, and then anything beneath that would be executed if it's equal to 5. And then you put this word called break, which says, I'm done, come out and drop out of my conditional statement and go do it again, or go to the end of it. And then you could put another one that says case 6, and it would be your what you want to do for if it's equal to 6. And you can do as many case statements as you want in there. And depending on the language, it's either case else or default, typically. And what that is if you went through your if-then-else statements the whole way through and dropped out the bottom, that would be your default. And the most important thing about a case statement to remember is you need the break statement in there, because if you do not, it will drop to the next one. So let's say you have a case for a 5 and a case for a 6. Whenever you get done with 5, you don't have a break. It's going to drop right into 6 and start doing whatever 6 is supposed to do. So the break's very important. The break basically says, I'm done with this conditional statement. Get out of it. And if you don't, it just keeps dropping down to the next thing. And this will all make a lot more sense whenever we get it actually in the programming. But we wanted to cover the conditional statement of programming, because when we get into there, we want to make sure that you understand that we're doing something conditional. It's based on, we're doing this because this is this way. And that's something that's very important. So let's talk about loops. So there's a ton of different kinds of loops. And it really, a lot of it depends on the language you're using too. Because again, languages have different ways of doing it. But most languages have most of these options now. So you have a for loop. So basically what a for loop is a loop that will continue based on a set of variables. So let's take C, for example, or actually C, PHP, and a few other languages that do this. So you have the word for, and you have in there, you have a variable. So let's say we're going to call it L for loop. And first thing you want to do when you start this loop is you want to set L equal to 0, because you're starting at the beginning. And let's say you want to loop for 100 times. So then you're going to say for L equals 0, and then you're going to say that's how you start. And then I want to loop while L is less than or equal to 100. So you put in L less than or equal to 100, and then you put in what you want to do for each loop, and that is increase L by 1. So no matter how the language does it, so like I'll say if you did it in BASIC, which I think Visual Basic says the same way, it's basically for L equals 1 to 100. So what that will do is it'll loop to end for L 1 to 100, and every time it will increase L by 1. In C, it's you set L equal to 0. You say why L is less than 100, and you increment 1. So you got to do a little more work in C, but it's a little bit more flexible because I could add 2 to L real easily in C. Now, you can do it in BASIC too, and Visual Basic as well, but it's just not done exactly. It's called a step. So you have to add step in. So by default, it does 1, but you can change it. You can override that 1. Again, it's doing the exact same thing. It's just sitting in that loop saying why this variable is equal to. And it's basically going to go through this loop so many times. It's like a predetermined number of times to go through a loop. So that's what the for statement's for. Is it's think of it as more as a predefined number of loops that you go through. And it could be it may be predefined by a variable, but it doesn't change in the middle of the loop. If you go into it, it's going to say, I'm going to go 0 to 100 every time. Or if it's a variable, it'd be 0 to 50, whatever. It's not going to say every time. It's going to conditionalize it. So, and there are... That's a general statement. There are times you can do conditional type things in there as well, but I don't want to get into that. It's a language specific thing. Think of a for loop as a defined loop. So you know it's going to happen this many times, no matter what. All right, so let's get into a do or a while statement. So again, this is there. I want you to look at them. This is the same thing for now. Think of a do statement as I'm going to do this set of code over and over again until some condition is met. So in your do statement, you say, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do it while, so say A is equal to 5. So you sit in this loop, and you're waiting for something to change A to something other than 5, and it's going to keep sitting in this loop until something changes it. And say something changes A equal to 6 or A equal to 1, it's going to drop out of that loop. So the do and the do while, and again, this is all dependent upon the language, but think of them as the same thing. The difference is, the only difference really is the while statement is typically at the very top. So when you come into the statement to do the work, it's going to first say, is it equal? So is A equal to 5 before it does anything? So if it is equal to 5, it's going to go in that while statement, do that, and keep looping around it. But if it gets there and it's equal to 6, it's never going to do it. So the do while puts the while at the bottom and the do at the top. So when it gets to the do, it's going to do everything at least one time, even if A is equal to 6. But when it gets to the bottom, it's going to say A is equal to 6. I'm not going to go back to the top again. So that's the difference between while and do. They're both a loop, both conditional. Just the do typically does the comparison at the end of the process versus the top of the process. And you can do a while statement that works like a for statement. When you get into the while statement, before you get there, you say L is equal to 0, and in the while statement, you say while L is less than 100, and then in the brackets for the contents of the while, you would say plus add 1 to L. So it's the same thing as a for statement from that point of view, but while you don't use a for statement, it's so much quicker and easier to do. So the whole idea of the while statement is an unknown length. You basically continue this while this is happening. And there's also a do until. Some languages call it until. Instead of a while. So there's a do while, do until. They're basically the same thing. It's just a difference in language. All right, so let's talk a little bit about functions. So far, the program we've talked about is pretty much top to bottom. Most programs run from top to bottom. You can do different jumps around. In fact, in the old days when there was original line number, what I call line number basic, which is what I learned on, every line had a number like 10, 20, 30, 40, you know, at the line. And you could do a go to and jump it to any other line. Well, I'm going to say that is a pain to follow. So these days, and there was no structure. There was no structures like we have today. Even like the go-tos and the for nows and all that stuff didn't exist back then. It was all go-to. So you do an if statement, and if it was true, you do a go-to back to the line where you want to do it over again. So everything we just described structure-wise with conditional statements and loops didn't really exist. Not the way it does today. But typically today, most things go top to bottom. In fact, they all, I don't know if anything doesn't go top to bottom. They may not start at the top of your code. They may look for a particular function called, like C looks for the function called main. But most things, you know, will just start from the top and find the first thing that's like open. PHP, you can have a ton of functions at the top and then put your code at the bottom or put your code at the top. Doesn't matter. So the way you can get around having this one long string of things in these go-tos is a function. So all a function is a defined function. So in that function, you have certain things you want to do. So you may have this function that goes out, reads a database, and takes two values, adds them together, and puts them out to the screen. Somewhere else in your program, you want to do this a bunch of times, you write a loop calling that function. So rather than putting all that code into that loop, you call that one line function. It makes it very easy to read. It comes down and it runs that code and comes back up to where it lets off. So it just makes things a lot easier. You can definitely, in most cases, probably put that code in line, but where it becomes helpful is that function is used more than one other location. So rather than copying that code all these different places, you copy it one place and you call it from another. So, and it's more to it than just calling the function. You got to tell it what values you want it to work with. Now, not all functions require a value. You may have a function that closes a window. It doesn't matter. It looks close to the current window. So it doesn't care what, it doesn't need any function or any value. It just says close the window and it goes and it does that. You may have a function that just prints something to the screen. Doesn't need a value to print out. But if you ever want to print something to the screen based on some other value, you have to pass it in. So that's where we get into passing variables to a function. Again, not all functions can take input or need input. Many functions just, you know, don't have any input. They just do something and they do something predefined. But there, you can pass variables into a function. Now, there's a couple ways, depending on the language, how this works. It can be passed by value or by reference. So what I mean by that is, let's talk about reference. In our very first show last week, we talked about everything is stored in a memory location. If it's passed by a reference, what will happen is when you call that function, you give it the variable name, it's going to find out where that variable is stored in memory and pass that over to this function. What the function is going to do is go to that memory location and pull it out and use it. The advantage to doing it by reference is since it knows where that variable is located, it can typically update the variable. So if you want that function to update that variable, it can. So that's passing things by reference. Now, not all languages pass by reference. Some of them can pass by reference or by value, and other ones only pass by reference, other ones only pass by value. So it really depends on the language, and we'll have to talk about that in each individual language. So passing by value is done by, basically what happens is when you call that function, being in the background, there is this function called a push. So the value you have on that you passing over is pushed into memory at a certain location that's to a certain pointer. And pointers are all something that runs in assembler. So it pushes things to the stack. It's called pushing to the stack. It calls your function. Your function knows how many things should be there and it pops them off the stack. So basically it puts somewhere temporarily. You get to the function and the function pulls them back off. But what it doesn't know is where that's stored in memory. It doesn't know it's stored in memory anywhere. It could have been a calculated value that's not stored anywhere. So that's called passing it by value. So the disadvantage of passing it by value is you want that function to make a change. It cannot. Now, and this is probably getting deeper than what I probably wanted to get in these first three shows, is, you know, the passing by reference or passing by value. So a function, most functions, again, most functions, I'm going to say this because not every language is exactly the same, allow you to return a value as well. So when you define the function, you say, I'm going to return an integer, I'm going to return a character, or I'm not going to return anything, I'm going to be void, I'm going to return blank. So that when the function does whatever it needs to do, it can basically return a value. So you call your function, and what you get back from that function is the value that you wanted. And the languages that don't allow you to pass by reference, that's the only way you can get the value back. And we're getting all these, the global variables and all stuff later in different languages. I'm not going to go into it now, but you can also do things in global variable formats as well, which basically Like the name says, the variable is global between functions. So most languages, if you're in a function and you declare a variable, the variable only exists within that function. So when the function is created and ran, it creates this new variable and then destroys the variable. So it does its own cleanup. Now there are ways around that. Again, we'll get into that in each individual language, but something to think about. And also, for the most part, most languages don't allow incoming variables to get into a function that are not being passed in. There are exceptions to that, though. So I don't want to say that's exactly the case. So think of a function as a tiny little program. That's basically what it is. So when you create a program, it's tiny little programs inside of a program, and then you call those little programs to do the work. And the values coming in and out, we'll have to cover in each individual language, because again, each one is different. But that's something to think about, is how do you get to the variables that you want to do in there. And you'll see that in the examples in 2 weeks when we start, well, probably 1 or 2 weeks away, but we start talking about, you know, getting physical hands on the keyboard to get stuff coded. You'll start to see that kind of stuff. All right. So let's see. I think that's all I wanted to cover today. I did have some example graphics for the function returns. This is the function return right here. So the variable comes into the function. So you pass in two variables and it comes out as another variable. So these would be your two inputs, A and B. Maybe in the function you say C is equal to A plus B, and then you return the C value from the function. That's kind of what it's explained without looking at the actual picture. All right, a couple of housekeeping items. Again, this is episode number 2 of the program. The program is to teach you to program from nothing. That is our goal, at least. And these first 3 weeks are to help explain to you the basics under the covers, because I have a strong belief that if you understand what happens under the covers and you learn a language, you can learn any other language rather quickly and without much trouble. So this show is part of the TechZen TV network, and you can go to youtube.com/TechZenTV to get all of our shows. We have a ton more shows than just this one show. In fact, this is only our second episode of this show, and we have hundreds of episodes of different things out there. So definitely encourage you to go out to YouTube. And if you're into the like, programming thing, another one you might want to check out of ours is Let's Make It. We do programming in there almost every week. It's typically on Arduino or Raspberry Pi, something, you know, like that, but it's done in the C language. But it's a great show if you're into wanting to learn how to program too. If you have a Twitter account, you can follow us on Twitter at TechZenTV. And if you're watching us on YouTube, let me go back to YouTube. Then if you could give us a thumbs up out there and subscribe, that definitely helps us get found. And if you're watching us on download, like off iTunes or any of your other podcasting directories, if you go out to iTunes next time you're out there and give us a rating, that would definitely help us out more than what people understand. That's for sure. You can get show notes from this show and for all of our shows just by going to techzen.tv, and you see at the top the shows. Pick the show that you're interested in. In this case, this is the program, and you can go out and get all of the show notes out there as well. Next week, let's see, what are we going to cover next week? We're going to talk about object-oriented, compiled versus interpreted languages, and a few semantics and things like that. And it's actually even shorter week than this week, probably, because it's just a little bit of cleanup before we get started in Python. Python comes up in 2 weeks is when we get started. And then for 12 weeks, we're going to talk Python every week. And we still haven't picked the language to come up after Python, but we have some things in development. So by 12 weeks, we should have something ready to go. I definitely appreciate you hanging out with me for however long this show was. I love have you here every week. If you have somebody else that wants some programming, be sure to spread the word. And if you could check out our show and find some other shows, get some friends that may be interested in them, you know, spread the word around. We definitely appreciate everybody helping us get found. We are a fairly new network and we're growing quickly, but we definitely like to grow a little bit faster. And also, any input you have, send it to the program at techzen.tv, and we'll get that. And if you heard me say something wrong, definitely correct me. I'll make sure that on the next show that it's corrected. All right, everybody, thank you very much for hanging out with me. We'll see you all next week. For show notes for this show, contacts, and more, go to the techzen.tv website, where you can get show notes for all of our shows. We love to hear from our viewers and listeners. We have an email, a Twitter, and a phone number where you can contact us for each show. For details, visit the techzen.tv website and get the show details. You can also make a video and upload it somewhere like YouTube or Vimeo and then just send us a link. You never know, you may see your video in a future show. You can get all of our shows delivered automatically to your favorite device by going to your favorite podcast website like iTunes and subscribing. Each of our shows also has a YouTube channel you can subscribe to get regular updates. Our shows are also available on most internet radio networks like Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. You can also watch and listen to our shows on Xbox, TiVo, and Roku. You can even find us on your Zune.